This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Sweden is a small, rich Nordic nation of just 10 million people and home to global giants like IKEA and Volvo. It's gained fame in recent history by taking the path less trodden in two of the most significant events in the period, namely its approach to refugees and immigration, and as well as in tackling coronavirus, which some say is due at least in part to an idea called the opinion corridor, a concept that refers to the narrow range of opinions deemed appropriate in Swedish media. So here to discuss this and other related issues like trade and the economy is His Excellency Dag Jalin Danfelt, Sweden's ambassador to Malaysia. Your Excellency, Dag, thank you for your time and attention today. Let's begin with Sweden's response to COVID-19. Your country, Sweden, gained fame for its light response to the pandemic, opting out of strict lockdowns, relying instead on voluntary guidelines set out by health authorities. But the news and the data doesn't seem to show that this strategy is working. In the last month and in the last few days, in fact, Sweden has registered nearly 1,000 cases per day. Your caseload is now in total over 110,000. And there's early signs of the pandemic strengthening again with an increase in new hospital admissions. I guess the question that remains to be asked, Dag, is Sweden finally going to reassess its approach to the pandemic?
First of all, I think your figures are entirely correct. Indeed, not only in Sweden, I think all over Europe, large parts of the world, the pandemic is regaining force, you know, in the second or third wave. The Swedish approach stipulated by our National Health Authority has been to try to balance the needs of the broad needs of society and the economy with the health concerns, and to avoid overloading the health system. As you pointed out, we have not gone for a full lockdown, which also implies some legal dimensions in the case of Sweden. And we have a tradition where people do follow the recommendations issued by national authorities, in this case, the National Health Authority. And to a very large extent, I would say that the Swedish population have been adhering to the guidelines issued. You know, working from home, for example, is the norm rather than the exception since the beginning of the pandemic. But there have been certain, you can call them shortcomings or failures. For example, Sweden did fail in its protection to protect the homes of the elderly. The vast majority of the 5,900 deceased are people aged 70 or above, you know, and they've been vulnerable and were hit due to shortcomings. You know, that's also been concluded. It's also been a conclusion of the National Health Authority. But it is, you know, I think the expectation is that we'll have to live with this for a time, you know, until a vaccine comes. And even when there is a vaccine with a mutating virus, there are question marks as to how viable a solution, a vaccine will be. So there are multiple challenges to take into account. Also, perspective that future that implies multitude of challenges. COVID-19 challenge is the immediate, but maybe the smaller challenge in a long-term perspective that includes dramatic consequences as a result of climate change and loss of biodiversity.
I understand. So did the approach to the pandemic have a effect on the economy or a positive effect on the economy as intended in terms of not possible economic fallout from taking a more draconian approach?
As Sweden, the Swedish economy contracted by some 8% in the second quarter of this year. So, you know, our economy has taken a strong hit as well, you know, as many other countries. Our Nordic cousins in Denmark, Norway, Finland have fared better when it comes to the economy, even with lockdown. But then again, Sweden is a very trade-dependent economy. We, as you pointed out in your introduction, we are home to a fair number of big multinationals, and they depend on their ability to trade. And when other markets close down, obviously it doesn't matter. If we keep open, they will be hit as well. The economy has been recovering in the third quarter, but still at the end of the year, the expected outcome will be negative growth of between 3.5% to 5%. Economy, no doubt, is suffering.
Right. So I guess, Dag, it does bear mentioning that the approach to the pandemic, voluntary as it was, did have some economic, did have some human fallout. as well as the economic fallout. So were there any bright spots from this whole approach in terms of its management of the pandemic? Because it does seem as if on both fronts, human and economy, there was the fallouts that could have been but was not mitigated.
It's difficult to talk about bright spots in characterized by massive suffering. And I don't want to engage in anything that could sound as, corona nationalism. But compared with other countries, I think, economically, we've fared fairly well. But this is something that will last for a couple of years. Swedish economy is foreseen to be in a state of recession at least until 2022-23, depending on how the global economy develops. So, to talk about bright spots, it's far too early. I think when assessments will be done in 2-3 years' time, we'll see which approach was the wisest. But for sure, the Swedish authorities' concerns are they are not operating in a vacuum. They are closely consulting with European and other peers, with the WHO, and try to calibrate their response to the most optimum way. Whatever would be the most successful approach in the long term remains to be seen.
The second issue, Dag, on which Sweden deviated significantly to its European peers was on immigration. During the 2015 migration crisis, Sweden, as per your policies, accepted more asylum applications than any other EU country relative to population size. But this approach to immigration is said to be among the key sparks to your country's domestic, in fact, some would say and describe it as gangland violence, which is not only at odds with your squeaky clean image as a country, but also costs some kind of friction where it comes to to some corporations which have their headquarters in Europe, in Gothenburg, in Sweden itself.
Sweden has received immigrants, mostly refugees. We have a tradition that dates back at least the end of the Second World War. And our in accordance with our obligations according to the UN Convention on Protection of Refugees. And so the integration has, until, say, 10, 15 years ago, never posed a major challenge, even though integration is a challenge in itself to teach people coming from foreign countries to speak the language, to adapt to a new culture, etc. It's not easy always. It's quite a challenge. In beginning of 2000s, with the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, and later on in Syria, Yemen, Somalia, we received an increased number of claiming asylum from these countries. And indeed, that has posed big integration challenges. And one has to consider the figures. Out of the different estimates, depending on how one defines one's origin, one estimate is 24-25% of Sweden's population of 10.3 million are born outside of Sweden or by parents born outside of Sweden. And a large part of this group originates outside of Europe.
Of course.
And so rather dramatic or big cultural differences compared to Sweden's secular model of society.
And of course, within the country of Sweden, the spectre of Islamization has been brought up multiple times. Experts say that political parties like the right-wing Sweden Democrats, which has roots in neo-Nazism, is a key cause of the riots in Sweden as well. What are your comments on that, as well as the fact that there's been a rise of right-wingism in many parts of Europe, including in Germany, Italy and France?
It's a phenomenon that that is obviously very serious, and that the Swedish government, as well as other European governments, are trying to confront actively, through education, but also through law and order, law and order tools. You hinted in your earlier question that the outburst of organized crime or gang violence is connected to immigration. I think that's a bit of a simplified conclusion. Yes, we have a problem it's developed in the past 10 years with an increasing number of gangs in socially neglected areas, where criminal behavior has dominated the areas concerned. And this poses a huge challenge for the police. And of course, that there is a connection with an underestimation of the challenges of integration. But it's you know, socially rather complex challenges that are not easily tackled, certainly not only by law enforcement. It has to be involving education, you know, social authorities, etc. But we do have an issue. We have, as you pointed out, 17.5% of voters in last elections voted for the Swedish nationalist party, Sweden Democrats, who represent an anti-immigration agenda. And that's one side of the spectrum. The other side is groups who adhere to more extreme views of the recent arrivals to Sweden, who also, you know, propagate extreme solutions to societal problems.
Right.
These two extremes tend to reinforce themselves, while the government emphasizes that the rule of law applies equally to everyone, and everyone has to adhere, irrespective of origin, irrespective of religious beliefs, irrespective of gender or other issues. The law applies the same to everyone, and living in Sweden, we all carry a responsibility to adhere to the principles of tolerance and mutual respect.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm talking this morning to His Excellency Dag Jarlin Danfelt, the Swedish ambassador to Malaysia. We'll come back after this, ambassador, and talk about household names like IKEA, Volvo, as well as your country's international affairs. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
I'm talking this morning to His Excellency Dag Jarlin Danfelt, the Swedish ambassador to Malaysia. Now, ambassador, last we left it, we did discuss the Swedish approach to two of the biggest and most significant events in human history, at least in the last 50 to 100 years. And this is culture of exceptionalism, which people have been talking about where Sweden is concerned. And also experts say that because of these twin pressures of the commitment to manage migration and neoliberalism, Swedish exceptionalism has now been substantially eroded. Can you discuss what this Swedish exceptionalism means, this whole ideas corridor, and whether in fact it has been eroded like the experts say it has?
Swedish exceptionalism, I wouldn't quite adhere to that description. I don't think... Swedes would define themselves as being exceptional in any way. On the contrary, I think we adhere very strongly to the basic belief that we are all equal, you know, irrespective of origin or religion. But we do have a social model that is nowadays not only Swedish, it's Norwegian, even Nordic, even European, you know, which emphasizes social importance of social welfare, equality, trying to reduce inequality in societies, and of course that model, the financing of that model, all depends on society being functioning, you know, that people, there's enough people employed to pay their taxes, companies to pay the corporate taxes, so that the government has something to work with when it comes to its ambition to create an equal society, while fostering an economy that continues to remain innovative and creative. You know? That is our lifeline. We don't have natural resources like oil or gas that can cover up economic shortcomings. You know, we depend on the ability of our industry, our companies, our population to innovate and create.
Of course,
new
of
ideas.
Course.
You know?
So these social issues, Ambassador, they've had economic repercussions, trade repercussions. I think the chief executive of Volvo, late last year, Håkan Samuelsson, discussed even explored the possibility of moving headquarters of Volvo away from Gothenburg in Sweden, potentially to other parts of the world. And of course, we do know that the parent of Volvo is actually Geely of China, based, of course, out of the most populated country in the world. I guess in general terms, how is the whole issue of domestic enterprises being considered in the context of not just the social unrest situation, but also in terms of the pandemic?
When you say social unrest, it sounds as if you describe a country that is on the verge of civil war. That is definitely not the case. As a matter of fact, crimes as such has not increased in Sweden, but while killings and gang-related killings have increased, and that is a challenge, of course. Whether that's the main cause of Volvo, I'm not aware of Volvo having serious plans to move out of Sweden, and I think the statement that you attributed to Håkan Samuelsson can be interpreted in many ways. But of course, it's an overall priority of the Swedish government to make sure that not only Swedish companies, that companies invest and continue to stay in Sweden. Whether Volvo in the long term, Volvo cars, that is, you also have the other Volvo trucks and buses, but if whether Volvo cars, which is owned by Geely, in the long run would move to China or somewhere else, remains to be seen. At the end of the day, that's a corporate decision. But of course, the Swedish government has every incentive in the world to make sure that do its best to ensure that Volvo cars remain headquartered in Sweden. The research and development continues to take place in Sweden. Yeah. And I think it's not an easy thing to uproot a company like Volvo Cars, because it's deeply embedded notably in Western Sweden, with universities, with the communities, etc. You know, it's part of Swedish culture even. But in the end of the day, it's all about Sweden managing to assure that business conditions in Sweden remain competitive, so as to make companies remain in Sweden.
His Excellency Dag Jarlind Danfelt, the Swedish ambassador to Malaysia, is with me on the grill. Now, there's also, of course, the whole idea of trade between our two nations, ambassador. And when we analyze the numbers over the last few years, the amount of goods, the value of goods and services that's come from Sweden to Malaysia has been on the decline. I think the value at one point in time was something to the order of half a billion euros. Now that number has declined to somewhere between 300 to 350 million euros. What's explained this decline, not just to Malaysia, but potentially even to the region, at a time when ASEAN is on the rise?
I think the trade statistics should be read carefully. The figures that you're alluding to are referring to direct trade between Sweden and Malaysia. It's not reflective of trade going through, for example, Singapore or through European ports such as Rotterdam. So I think the real commercial interaction between our two countries is higher. And then I think more importantly, the real measure of commercial links is to be found in the amount of investments between the countries. And there we have approximately 100 Swedish or Sweden-related companies active in Malaysia. Most of the Swedish multinationals are present here. And over the years, most have been here for a long, long time. And since Merdeka, or the years after Merdeka, and have contributed with substantial investments to Malaysia over the decades. I would say that our trade relations or commercial relations are very much robust, and as we foresee it, they will remain to be robust, to be on a good footing.
So, of course, on that point, Ambassador, I think Bear's also asking you how closely you're watching the political developments in Malaysia, because obviously business and trade does like stability, it does like certainty, and that is something which is sorely absent in Malaysia's political scene right now. What is your sense of Swedish businesses' approach to Malaysia where the political instability is concerned?
My sense is that one shouldn't overinterpret what is happening momentarily in Malaysia. You know, what is the type of political rivalry taking place in Malaysia is to be seen also in other countries. I mean, to have a minority government is more the norm than the exception in many European countries, including Sweden. You know, politics is the art of making compromises, bipartisan compromises if necessary. And to my knowledge, there's no Swedish companies that has expressed concern over, you know, the risk of increased political instability in Malaysia. I mean, Malaysia is stable. There's no signs of, except for the discussions in between government and opposition in parliament.
I know it's a bit of a stretch to ask you, Dog, but what have been some private reservations voiced by Swedish corporations when it comes to whether to put more kronas or more euros into Malaysia, or whether to withdraw more kronas or more euros from Malaysia?
I haven't heard any such speculations from Swedish companies. On the contrary, there are a few companies that have plans for major investments in Malaysia in the pipeline. You know, these investments have probably been delayed a bit by the COVID pandemic, MCOs, etc., the difficulty to cross-border movements. But I think, you know, overall the prediction is that Malaysia will remain stable.
And of course,
in the long term,
yeah. And of course, from a Swedish stroke European Union perspective, we've got the budget 2021 coming out in a few days' time. Is there a wish list? Is there a top three wish list from your part of the world in terms of what they would like to see from this upcoming budget?
I don't think we have opinions on the budget as such. What we, from a Swedish and I believe European perspective, would like to see is a resumption of the EU-Malaysia free trade agreement negotiations, which I think will be to the benefit of both parties, given that Europe is, I think, the third biggest destination for Malaysian exports. We would also like to see the ratification of the EU-ASEAN strategic cooperation agreement. Thirdly, we do welcome statements by the Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance that one of the parameters for the 2021 budget will be sustainability and circular economy, which is a high priority for European countries, for the European Union and its member states, and with kind of investments in society that takes the perspective of facing long-term or medium-term threats such as climate change and loss of biodiversity is something that we warmly welcome. And I foresee that there is every reason in the world for the European Union, including Sweden, to increase its cooperation when it comes to countering climate change and safeguarding biodiversity in the future.
Of course. Of course. Well, thank you, Dog, for your access, your honesty and your insights. As always, thank you for spending time with us. I was talking to His Excellency Dog Jalin Danfelt, Sweden's Ambassador to Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.